You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hansen and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Stephen A. Leahy from OPM Tax Advocates and attorney Michelle Pawlowski from Vogel Zhang Law. Now, here's John Hansen and Let's Get Legal.
At 2:11 on WGN, heard from Stephen A. Leahy in the first hour. Michelle Pawlowski joins us now from Vogel Zhang. Michelle, good to talk to you again. How are you?
So good. I can't wait to give you my baby advice.
That's right. Yeah. I've been soliciting that. By the way, we've been getting so many nice texts on the text line for people's quote unquote advice. And it's all welcome and I love it all. Some of it I would say is not probably what's recommended by the American Academy for Pediatrics. Nothing bad, but I'm not going to read every single text. So if you don't hear yours, either I'm reading it later or, I don't think I should give it a megaphone. to say, you know, I'm doing the lawyerly thing, Michelle, right? I don't want to spread any, but everyone's got their own thing. So what, you have a 2-year-old daughter, right?
I do. Yeah. So my advice you won't find on the AAP website either, but my advice is babies can't fall from the floor. So a lot of times parents, they want to put the baby on the bed or on the couch,
right,
or leave them on the changing table for that 1 second because they're like, oh, it's more comfortable. But put them on the floor. They can't roll and fall down. That's always my favorite advice to give.
Yeah. Put a blanket down. If you're down there, do a little changer. Let them play there for a little bit.
Yeah.
Do the little thing. We got one of those toys where they're overhead and they go like that. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
When
short
in doubt, go down to the ground.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
How's everything going with you? How's everything at Vogel Zhang?
Really well. Our office is gearing up for a trial in March. So we've been busy, but everything's been good. Have a lot of great clients in the lineup, doing a lot of depositions, and it's been great.
312-981-7200 is our phone number, by the way. If someone hasn't heard of Vogel Zhang before, or maybe they've seen the commercial or heard them here on the station, but only in passing, you guys are singularly focused. I don't want to put it that narrow, but you guys really focus on mesothelioma, lung cancer cases. That
pretty
is
much
your bread and butter, right?
Yes, 99% of our cases are focused in asbestos litigation. And to add on to the diseases that you can sue for, mesothelioma, lung cancer, and asbestosis. Asbestosis is not as widely known. It's a type of pulmonary fibrosis. And obviously, as the name suggests, it only occurs from being exposed to asbestos.
When you say pulmonary, does that mean it's something to do with your heart and lungs together?
Pulmonary fibrosis is with the lungs.
Okay.
And fibrosis is a scarring of that tissue in the lungs. So asbestos being such a fine and small particle, getting in your lungs can scratch your lungs over time and cause your lung to build up into a hardness almost. And it makes it more difficult to breathe over time. So that pulmonary fibrosis can occur and be diagnosed by a doctor. And sometimes people don't realize that their asbestos exposure, when they're diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, that actually could be asbestosis.
Mm. Is asbestosis only obviously asbestosis is only caused by asbestos.
Correct.
Like mesothelioma. Lung cancer obviously has a variety of different causes out there, which can make the cases maybe a little bit more, or people think they're going to be a lot more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But even lung cancer, if you've worked around asbestos, call you guys, talk through it. Because even if you were a smoker and you develop lung cancer, it could have been exacerbated by working with asbestos and you might still have a case, right?
Correct. And sometimes clients are shy about calling in and talking about their lung cancer case because they think, oh, I smoked for so many years. That's obviously the cause of my lung cancer. And many times, if they've been exposed to asbestos, lung cancer is not the only cause. It's a contributing cause. But when you are also exposed to asbestos and are a smoker, there's this synergistic effect that occurs where it makes you multiple times more likely to develop lung cancer with that asbestos exposure.
I think if someone is diagnosed with mesothelioma, which of course is a horrific diagnosis to get, then their mind knows, or their doctor probably tells them, this was caused by asbestos. We don't have anything else that we know of that causes mesothelioma. But with that lung cancer, it's a little bit more variable. And maybe there's a woman who develops lung cancer and she's like, I didn't work in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
But you can ask questions like, did your husband work in the trades?
Yes.
Did you do all the laundry? Like, there are maybe more people out there that realize that potentially they may have a case than really know it, right?
Correct. So when we have someone call in, a potential new client call in who has not worked in the trades, our first questions are then, what did your mother and father do growing up? What did your siblings do growing up? Did you have an older sibling that lived in at home that worked in the trades? Were you doing their laundry? Because there is such a thing called take-home exposure. And you often see that in a husband and wife pairing. The husband is out working in insulation work, boilermaker work, something like that in the trades, and they come home and bring that asbestos home on their clothes. And then the wife doing the laundry shakes those clothes out and gets exposure to asbestos by that laundry work.
And it's repeated exposure.
Repeated exposure.
Doing this every day or twice a week or something like that can cause it. And I don't know if it was you that told me this, but other folks as well, that even, this is so heartbreaking to even say, but it was like someone whose kid used to always put on his dad's jacket as a kid. And the latency period is like, what, 20 or 30 years before you get diagnosed with mesothelioma. For many people, that means in their 50s, 60s, 70s, or beyond. But for this person, it was in their 30s.
Oh, wow.
Because they wore the coat. Like, every single day he'd come home and he'd wear that coat that his dad used to have out of the trades. I mean, these are heartbreaking cases.
Absolutely. And it's always inspiring to meet these families and see how they're fighting and that they want to pursue justice with us. But it is, of course, heartbreaking hearing those stories, especially when in the husband and wife situation where the husband is bringing home that asbestos, not knowing the dangers to their family, to their spouse, and the guilt that families often feel from those types of situations.
Anyone that's diagnosed with lung cancer then, should everyone at least be having an internal conversation wondering, even if they're a smoker, wondering, is there someone in my immediate family that worked in one of these trades? And then maybe be calling you just to have that conversation?
Absolutely. Just to have that conversation. Because maybe you have a family member that worked in the trades, but you weren't even around them. Maybe you were seeing them at family parties all the time. Maybe you were doing their laundry because you lived with them for a period of time. It depends. It's a case-by-case basis. Depends on the family situation. So we love to talk through that timeline of people's lives to see if there is some sort of exposure that you could sue for.
And people always want to know the why, but even if they get an answer and they chat with you guys and, you know, you guys don't really see maybe a link there or maybe not, that's at least one more thing that they can kind of cross off the list. There is almost some piece of that too, getting an answer that, you know, we don't think that this is either a case or, you know, I don't think that this maybe is a link. That's okay too if they get that answer, right?
Right. So just calling and talking about it, sometimes discussing what some of the sources could have been, even if there is no lawsuit, can bring people some peace. And I see that all the time. Or just peace in knowing that, okay, maybe my lung cancer wasn't caused by any asbestos exposure. I didn't have any high level of exposure to contribute to that synergistic effect. So it's, we always love talking to people and hearing their stories, and then getting that peace of mind is also a big piece of the puzzle.
If someone knows someone that passed away from mesothelioma and they didn't go through with the court case, the person didn't or didn't know they should or whatever the case may be, is there like a period of time in which there's a statute of limitations where a family might be able to sue on their behalf of all that time lost with their grandpa, whatever the case may be? Is there?
Yes, there is. 2 years after that person passes away, you have 2 years after that to bring a lawsuit. And again, it depends on the situation, depends on the diagnosis and when the diagnosis was, but traditionally, it's 2 years after the date of death.
And that's a pretty firm thing. So if someone lost someone and we're so sorry in the last year, talk to Vogelsang, because the family is entitled to something too.
Yes, absolutely. The survival and wrongful death claims are still, you're able to pursue those after a person's death. So we take those cases as well.
We get sometimes people text in, and I don't think they're wrong, generally speaking, in that we are a very litigious society, it seems like. But in these cases, you're not just suing companies that, you know, they didn't know either about asbestos, and oh my goodness, nobody knew. How could you know that it caused cancer? It was this miracle thing developed in World War II. It was around everyone. You're suing and winning cases against companies that knew it was bad and still sent people to work in there, right?
Yes. And in my view, as a plaintiff's attorney, it's so unbelievable to me that defendants and these large corporations wouldn't have known the negative effects, the hazards of asbestos, given all of the literature that was coming out and being disseminated through the government, through these corporations that asbestos was dangerous, hazardous, and could cause cancer or mesothelioma. So that's why we continue to pursue these cases against these companies. We know that they had this knowledge of the dangers of asbestos, and they didn't care. It was a cheap substance to use in everyday work, and they continued to use it.
If a company tries to hide behind the idea of, well, we didn't know, the standard or the what you have to prove is not only that, oh, that they didn't know, but you can show that they should have known, right? Yes. That can be another level that you can show, right?
Yes, the standard is that you knew or should have known. So we can show, based on the information that was out there, different meetings, maybe with OSHA, when OSHA was formed, different articles that were disseminated, different libraries that certain corporations kept at their headquarters. That's how we get to the bottom, that they should have known of the dangers of asbestos.
Okay, we got to take a quick little break here. Getting some good text questions, and I'll get to those in a moment. Also, some interesting advice. 847 says, sing to your baby. I don't know if he's going to want that, but play classical music to your baby. Mozart's a great one. We bought a piano off of Facebook Marketplace a couple weeks ago. I play piano. I hadn't played in years, though. I'm all ready for that. I got the classical music. I bought an Elton John book. I bought a Fleetwood Mac book. That's also for me, too, but I figured that's good to play for the baby, too. So we'll get to some more of your advice and questions, too, that you may have about asbestos, about mesothelioma, lung cancer cases with the fine folks at Vogelzang Law. And that's our website, too, VogelzangLaw.com. John Hansen here with our friends from Vogelzang Law. Michelle Pawlowski answering some questions for you, for everyone, for me, 312-981-7200. Michelle, can I give out one more piece of advice I got on the text line from the 630?
Please.
Don't panic over every rash, cut, or sniffle. They'll be fine. Agree with that?
Agree. Yeah. Don't spend time Googling any more than 20 minutes. Otherwise, you're going down a Reddit rabbit hole and it'll turn into a spiral.
Yeah, for sure. 219 says, as they grow, give them chores so they can learn how to pick up toys, laundries, clean, cook, and be self-sufficient. How early can I start teaching my kid to cook for me?
Right out away. Of the womb.
Right when we get back from the hospital?
I will say my two-year-old loves to cook. She loves to cook and clean and vacuum.
Whoa.
Something that she picked up on her own, and she loves to do it. And I just let her go out there with the spray bottle all over the kitchen table. She loves it.
I like how you say picked up on your own. It's like, well, maybe when you Velcroed that vacuum handle to her, Michelle, that's what got her going. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
773 has a question on the text line. How hard is it to win a case? That's an interesting question. I know that's really open-ended. I'd imagine, I don't want to say it's easier, but since you guys do this so well with asbestos and mesothelioma, you at least have this body of knowledge to work from already, right?
You're totally right. One of the attorneys in my office, I think, is almost a encyclopedia on asbestos and defendants. Our attorney, Wyatt Berkover, you did, yes, this breadth of knowledge on different defendants who used asbestos and the type of asbestos they used during certain periods of time. So we often go to him and refer to him if we have a niche question. But we just have, our firm has such a long history of pursuing these lawsuits. So I would say it's easier than firms who don't do asbestos litigation often, which is why you want to call us.
312 says, I don't want to be part of a larger group of people suing all at the same time. Class action doesn't interest me. That's not what you do, right?
That's perfect. Then call us, because you won't be a part of a class action. Every lawsuit we bring is individual. So it's actually an individual plaintiff that we're suing a long list of defendants. Sometimes 50, 100, or more defendants.
How? What? Who? Isn't it just the company that sent you out on the job?
No. Well, recently in Illinois, it was only recent that you can sue your employer for asbestos exposure in a civil lawsuit. Typically, that kind of claim fell under the Workers' Compensation Act or the Occupational Diseases Act. But now, if you have a lung cancer or mesothelioma diagnosis after 2019, you can bring claims against your employer. So employer number one, yes, that can happen in Illinois as a defendant. But all of these different boilers, it's especially seen in steel mills, mm-hmm, or powerhouses or energy type of plants, that you're seeing a lot of pumps and valves and boilers and turbines.
So the companies that make those things.
Yes.
Okay.
Who used asbestos-containing gaskets, insulation. on their different component parts.
50 or 100 defendants?
Sometimes.
Wow.
It depends on how many work sites you have and where you've worked, where you've been. But that's why it's important to have those detailed initial conversations to determine, okay, who could have been in these different powerhouses and figure that out with the client, what so they saw.
Do clients call sometimes and you go and you listen to their story and they start listing off some of the places they've worked and light bulbs are already going off in your head because they've already been a defendant in one of the cases you've sued because they've done it before?
Sometimes a light bulb goes off, but of course we always rely on our clients to tell us where they were and what they were around. So it's an ongoing conversation with your client to figure that out.
But what I mean is they say a company name and you're like, oh, we've already sued them.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Like you've already litigated that and already kind of have a blueprint, perhaps. Each case is individual, of course, mm-hmm. and there's different things you have to prove to show it, but if you've already kind of reached over the plateau of clearly they've been found guilty before, you already kind of have a roadmap for a case.
There's different job sites, yes, that raise major alarm bells because they've been sued in so many cases previously. So when that alarm bell raises, it gets, you know, more information.
Okay, we've got some people calling in on the phone line right now. More texts coming in, too. You can hang out a little longer, right, Michelle?
Of course.
All right, we'll do more with Michelle Pawlowski from Vogelzang Law, Vogelzang Law.com. After the news here, we're chatting with Michelle Pawlowski from Vogelzang Law. You ready for some questions on the phone and text line?
I would love to.
All right, let's go to Lawrence on line one. Hello, Lawrence. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
What do you got for us here today?
Well, I worked with asbestos 60 years ago.
Whoa.
And I'm 85 now, but I...
You sound great for 85, Lawrence, but keep on going. You sound great for 85.
Yeah, well, I went to the doctor for a complete checkup a few years ago because of I started feeling a little worse in my later age. And he took x-rays and blood work and everything. And then he called me about 9 o'clock at night. I hadn't told him I worked with asbestos, but he called me up and he says, what kind of work did you do during your life? He says, I see you have, I think he called it pleuroplax on your lungs.
Pleuroplax, yes.
To the lining of your lungs. And he said, did you work with asbestos? I said, yes, I did.
Wow.
Do I have any recourse?
Whether or not you have recourse, I would love to talk to you further. My work number is 312-466-1669. However, it sounds like you do have the startings of what could be a case, especially knowing you worked with asbestos, having those pleural plaques, discussing that with your doctor. We would love to talk to you further because that could be a potential case.
Lawrence, did you work with it 60 years ago and then never again, or was it a long time you worked with it?
Well, I never worked again. Actually, what happened, I was 20 years old, and I was working for this company that dealt with asbestos, and I started feeling bad, and I went to the doctor, and he says, well, your lungs are cloudy. I just suggest you change your job.
Wow.
And it worked with asbestos. We had no protection at all.
Mm-hmm. I only ask about that.
There was nothing. Yeah. All they let us do was shower at night. My brother worked the same job as I did, only a different shift, and he died at the age of 57 with asbestos of the cancer of the lungs.
Oh, my.
The sinuses, and he lost an eye and part of his job, but I'm still here.
And thank God for that. The reason I ask about the timing of it, Michelle, is does the time matter when a company may have found out that asbestos was bad? For instance, 60 years ago, I'm doing terrible math at the top of my head, but this got to be the early 1960s. Did companies know then that it was bad?
They should have known. If they didn't know, they should have known.
Okay.
There were studies coming out in the 30s and 40s already,
okay,
showing the connection of cancer and asbestos exposure. By the 60s, people started becoming much more aware. By the 70s, certain laws started to become in place, banning certain types of asbestos or certain levels of asbestos based on certain types. It actually wasn't until 2024 that chrysotile asbestos was completely banned in the U.S., but Lawrence, we would like to talk to you more, and it sounds like you have some significant asbestos exposure if they're seeing what's called pleural plaques in your lungs. That's exactly a part of that.
That's what he called it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had bladder cancer.
Oh, my.
I was operated on for that, and now I'm dealing with rheumatoid arthritis. I don't think they have any connections, do they?
Typically, bladder cancer and RA, no, those don't have a direct connection to asbestos, or at least science has not proven that. The greatest connection that we see is between lung cancer and mesothelioma and asbestos exposure, of course. But, of course, there's this little known, or lesser known, excuse me, asbestosis, which is that pulmonary type of pulmonary fibrosis that happens when you have these levels of asbestos exposure, and it causes scarring to the linings of your lungs and makes it very difficult to breathe in the future.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wonder what kind of life I could have had if I didn't have this.
Well, and that's exactly what they're going to chat with you with, Lawrence. Mm-hmm. I'll say the number a couple more times if you missed it or you didn't have a pen or paper nearby, but it's 312-466-1669. Okay, Lawrence?
Okay, and I do have a check stub from the company.
There you go.
Thanks for calling, Lawrence.
There you go, Lawrence. Having a little evidence there doesn't hurt either, does it? The check stub from the company.
Not at all. Never hurts.
Here's my question, and maybe he answered it with that last thing he said, that he didn't live, he wondered what life he could have lived without it. Mm-hmm. Is that what you are litigating for? I guess what I'm asking is, God willing, Lawrence doesn't, this isn't fatal for him. Maybe he doesn't have as much power to breathe. I guess what I'm asking is, what are you seeking with a client perhaps like Lawrence, generally speaking, who still is going to live a long time?
Right. There's different types of damages that you're seeking in these types of civil lawsuits. And one of them is exactly what Lawrence said, the type of life that you could have lived if you didn't have this disease. A lot of people get these diseases at the retirement age. They want to enjoy their life. They want to enjoy their grandkids. They want to take a break from working, and they're not able to live the life they wanted to live because they're restricted. They can't walk long distances. They have shortness of breath. They have other health issues that may have developed from not being able to breathe well. So that's one of the types of damages that we pursue in a civil lawsuit. The other types that are sometimes lesser seen, because this is a latent disease, is inability to work, any monetary value of work that you have not been able to perform due to your injury. And there's also, you can see loss of consortium claims by a spouse for them not being able to have support and love and someone there for them in the way that they could have if that person wasn't diagnosed with mesothelioma, lung cancer.
So there's a lot that's been taken away from someone, and there is, as weird as this may sound, or is there's a price for it.
Absolutely.
That's how we do things in this society.
There's a price for it, and we think that defendants should be paying that price to these families. Oftentimes, we have these families or people call in, especially with mesothelioma, that are at the end of their lives, and they're thinking, what am I going to do with this money? You know, there really is no perfect justice. If there was a perfect justice, these people with mesothelioma would be able to live longer lives and enjoy their settlements, enjoy their jury verdicts that they get in the end. But we try to give a little bit of a silver lining of knowing that this money will take care of your family, that when you are no longer here, your family will be able to have some sort of potential generational wealth that you didn't have before.
Mm. One other thing about Lawrence's story that I found interesting is that I don't know how long he ultimately said he worked with it, but it seemed like a shorter amount of time than his brother, unfortunately, I think he said. How, without trying to panic people, because, you know, odds are one time you're going to be okay. Like, oh my gosh, people worry about working in a CPS school or something, and maybe there's asbestos there. We've all been in buildings that have asbestos. There's different ways that we end up doing it, and we don't want to cause panic. But working for a year around it, is that enough to cause something?
Yes, we believe, and certain scientists and science shows, that one exposure to asbestos could cause mesothelioma. But of course, we would want to talk about what type of work were you doing? What type of potential asbestos were you working with? Where were you? What job sites were you at? What were you exactly doing? You know, we have some insulators that, of course, were exposed to a lot of asbestos insulation. But on top of that, they were working unloading boxcars at these different job sites, boxcars of asbestos, talking about how they couldn't even see the back of the boxcar. There was so much asbestos in there. So you add on those types of exposures, that's more of a likelihood to develop these types of diseases. It just adds on to that exposure.
Right. Yeah, one exposure could do it. But if a ceiling tile fell once around you, don't panic and run to them. for a lot of people get exposed once, twice, or sometimes get exposed a ton and develop none of these things too, right?
Yes. Mesothelioma, I should note, as I brought it up so many times, is a very, very rare disease. I think it's like 10 to 20 in 1 million per year in America are diagnosed with mesothelioma. So it's very rare. It just because you were exposed to asbestos does not mean you will develop it.
Right.
It's just a cause, or the known cause of that disease.
I just like saying that because as someone, as I've told you, sometimes Googles things too long. I know there's other people out there that might cause some anxiety for them. One other quick question before we go to break here. 219 wants to know, do you handle cases from Michigan? My brother had lung cancer last year. Part of his lung was removed. The cause was unknown. We'd like to chat with you. Do you handle cases elsewhere?
We do. I have clients across the whole country. Cook County is a great and favorable venue, so we try to file here. Sometimes we file in Michigan or Indiana. We have one of our newly barred attorneys now licensed in Indiana. It depends on the case and depends on the situation, but we are happy to take cases from all over the country and work with you.
312-466-1669 is the phone number. We'll get some more of your questions. Get them in right now, 312-981-7200. And if you have last bit of baby advice or one thing you wish you knew before you became a parent, you got 14 more minutes left till I don't talk to y'all for a couple of weeks. We'll get to that all next on WGN. Michelle Pawlowski with her second appearance. How's it going so far, Michelle?
Fantastic. Yeah. I've loved getting able to have a call this time.
I know. Absolutely. We love callers calling in and a lot of texters, too. And this time we don't have fighter jets zooming on by like we did when you were in during the Aaron Waters show. do you mind if I do one more thing of baby advice?
Yes,
this is from the 630. John, my advice for you, video, video, video. We have the capability to do it right in our hands. I wish I took a lot more video of my daughter when she was little. That sweet voice and innocent child. Now she's 16. We do have that capability.
Gosh, that's so true. And especially today with phones, the videos are shorter. It's not like when we were kids and had the video camera out and running for the whole birthday party and you get to look back and see your favorite clips. It's small clips now from your phone. So my husband and I have been trying to take longer videos as well.
Do you ever look back at them, even though she's like 2 years old?
Oh, I was doing it last night.
Oh, yeah?
Our favorite thing to do before bed is just look through videos of her, even though she's asleep.
That's so sweet. I always wonder, I'm like, am I just going to clog my phone up with so many photos that as I'm scrolling through the camera roll, it's just that? But
yeah.
I guess some nights, like we do that with vacations every now and then. We're like, oh, let's look back at that.
Yeah. I mean, my husband also gifted me a like terabyte of storage or something like that because he's like, we're taking all the pictures and video possible. So yeah, clog that camera roll up.
There you go. 312-981-7200. I have a silly question. Actually, let's go to the phone line. With Ryan, because he's got a question. Hello, Ryan. You're on WGN.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's going on with you?
A friend of mine, his father, I'll be 68, and he was a few years older than me, from the neighborhood. He worked for a brake company. I forget the name of it. And they used asbestos in the brakes. And his father died of cancer. He has cancer now.
His son?
And he's a few years younger than me. And I was just wondering if that can't, because my father died of cancer, but he smoked. And my doctor always says that, you know, you get checked every so often, you know, because he said there are certain cancers that are transferable from blood to blood, you know. And I was just wondering if it was possible, you know, asbestos poisoning transfers from, father to son or whatever.
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that, but if a dad is working around in those brake companies, Michelle, that's what asbestos was do is reducing heat.
Yeah.
That's the question of what did he bring home, right?
Yeah. So Daniel, the cancer,
Ryan is his name. Sorry.
Oh, Ryan. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong name. The cancer isn't actually what's transferred. It's those asbestos fibers that might have been brought home on the clothes of that father who worked at the brake factory. And brakes do, especially industrial brakes, so those brakes that you see on trucks and also brakes that you used to see on cars, had asbestos lining on them. So working on those brakes, that father could have brought that asbestos home and exposed his son. And then that son's exposure could have caused the son's cancer as well. This person who's your friend, what type of cancer do they have?
He has lung cancer.
Mm. Lung cancer. Okay.
And so, he never smoked.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, I mean, we see those cases rarely where someone has lung cancer and was never a smoker, but those are instances where you can really point to asbestos as the sole cause and the main cause of his lung cancer.
Ryan, can you
would they be able to detect that as the cause?
Perhaps. I mean, Ryan, I think you need to. Your friend's still around, right? He's still living.
Yeah.
Where does he live?
He lives in Tinley Park.
Okay. I mean, it doesn't matter. They take cases all across the country. Tell them about Vogelsang. Okay. Tell them about this conversation, seriously. And do you have a pen and paper? I want to give you a phone number, okay?
All right.
Yeah, go scramble the run. I'm going to say it a couple more times. I'm going to tell you once. I'll tell it a couple more times before the end of the show. So just stay right here on the line. 312-466-1669. 312-466-1669. Michelle, I think this points to exactly why you come on the show. Because I think a lot of people that maybe have never worked around asbestos will go, of course, if you have lung cancer and you were around asbestos, you're going to know, or your kids are going to know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people still don't know. They don't get it. They aren't explained all of this, right?
Yeah. And what a lot of people don't get now, too, especially people that aren't of that generation where asbestos was still so prevalent. You know, everyone now can look up everything on their phones. Back then, you had to go to the library. You had to learn this from your workplace. Workplaces were hiding this, the dangers of asbestos. So they didn't want to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
So often people don't find out until now or recently what those dangers are.
All right. Ryan, the number once again, 312-466-1669. And Ryan, if you didn't get it, yeah, there you go. You got it?
Yeah, I got it. I wrote it down. Thank you.
And it's Vogelsang Law. Okay. Adam, we don't have time for Adam's question on the phone line, but he asks, do some homes maybe have asbestos shingles? I'm sure there's homes that still have asbestos,
for
right?
For sure. Especially homes built, those old early 1900s homes up through potentially homes built in the 1960s, 1970s. The most important thing to do is not, if you think that's suspect, don't work on it yourself.
Yes.
Have that discussion with a professional. Sometimes they can test for it,
right,
or do different abatement procedures to make sure no one is exposed to asbestos during the removal of those shingles.
Michelle, we're out of time. 312-466-1669, Vogelsang Law. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks.
I appreciate
so much.
It.
Good luck with the baby.
Thank you. Yeah, and on that note, I'm going to sign off here from WGN. We'll chat in a couple weeks, everyone, and I might be calling into a show with some news, hopefully, in the next couple of days. You'll wait for that.